General Motors on Safari. Here is adventure. Excitement. And danger. Bringing you the African Bushveld of today and yesterday in dramatized fact, fiction, and true life documentary. General Motors on Safari.
East Africa has always been the hunter's dream. And of the three territories, I think Kenya is the land where most records were achieved, most adventures lived. I'm not forgetting for a moment the vast tracts of Tanganyika Serengeti, but Kenya, after all, is the country the greatest of the hunters chose to earn a living in, and the most famous clans visited. Ernest Hemingway was at home in this part of the world. Theodore Roosevelt favoured the Kinankop, the Garissa district, and the Mau forest of Kenya for his various safaris. From Kenya came John Boyes, King of the Kikuyu, J.H. Hunter, Fritz Schindler, and the Cousins Hill, who started the whole white hunting game. Tonight, then, I'm going to tell you of another Kenya safari. It concerns a white hunter I'm going to call David Ormerod. Well, this isn't his real name, but he was in London when I last met him and said, sure, I could broadcast his story as long as nobody knew the events described here tonight had anything to do with him. I don't know why he's taken this attitude, but I shall respect his wishes. His client we shall call Cecil Fitzgerald, for want of a better name. Because, of course, if his represented as his real self, contemporaries of both gentlemen will put two and two together and make a resounding four. The story of a safari in the rainforest, then. One I've called The Eyes of the Hunter. It all began on a November morning in Nairobi. The year was 1948. The white hunting business was struggling back onto its feet again after the war, and one of the most successful hunters was our before-mentioned friend, Ormerod. David was a big man. He stood 6 feet tall and sported a magnificent beard of many colours. Ormerod was between safaris. He'd made a packet, I remember, on the last one. A rich American lady had presented him with a disgraceful amount of money and would have given herself gladly had not David Ormerod valued his freedom and good name as a hunter too much. Besides, he always preferred elephant to women. This day he sat in one corner of the Norfolk Hotel bar, gazing out through the window at Nairobi's last rickshaw, mounted and inscribed by a flower bed.
Dave? Hello, Dave.
Hmm? Oh, Max. Where have you been? Sit down. Drink? When did you get back?
Last night. Kampala smells this season. Their drains have conked out or something.
Phew, you have no idea. And the flies. What are you drinking?
Well, not what you're drinking. You can depend on that. A beer, please. Big and cold.
Katavi, little lager, kubwa, baridi sana, eh? Now, orange juice in Guinea. Upezi, eh?
By Jove, Dave, your Swahili gets worse, not better.
Well, Katavi understands every darn word I say. I get my orange juice, you get your beer. What's the odds?
I've got some action for you.
Action?
You're free for a month, aren't you?
Oh, I'm having a rest.
The film star dame gave you so much loot, you can take it easy, huh?
I'm resting, for Pete's sake. I'm taking a reverend gent out after Christmas and a couple of Scotsmen to the Serengeti to shoot pictures in February, and then...
I don't want to know how rich you're becoming. I want to know whether you'll take someone out for me.
Oh, and she wasn't a film star. Just looked like it. Paint and powder in the bush. And perfume. Yeah, could handle a gun, though. That's the part that didn't fit.
Rich, too,
She wouldn't take her present back. I thought of sending it to her, but...
What?
I might need the money in old age. Who's this you want me to look after? I'll swap you the Scotsman for him. A month in the Serengeti taking pictures doesn't appeal at all. Well, I booked them last year before things started looking up. Who's your bird?
A yank.
Oh, no. Is there nobody else in the world with money except the Americans? I tell you what. You take him. Where's that flaming beer? Katari! Beer and orange juice, Quenda Mombasa, huh? Nina Takaleo, Hapana... What's the word for yesterday?
Oh, all right.
Oh, well, let's leave my Swahili out of it. Stupid lingo, anyway. Why can't you take this geezer out?
Two assignments conflict.
Oh, lucky old dear.
And we made a bargain, mate, if you remember.
Santa Katavi, Leti Barafu, eh? What bargain?
What bargain? Right short memory you've got, chump. Huh? We'd help one another out when the wars got crossed, of course. I took your ancient Swede up to the Congo for you, so now you ruddy well take charge of this yak.
Oh, okay, okay. Cheers.
Cheers. I mean, I'd have taken my Lady Gloria out with all the pleasure in the world, even without the little gift at the end of it all. Boy, why don't I ever get one like that? Rumor has it she didn't get what she really wanted in the end.
She got an elephant, a leopard, a ruddy good bongo, a fair lion, and the best forest hog I've seen in many moons. What do you mean she didn't get what she wanted?
Drink up, son, as if you didn't know. You're too pure, chum.
Yeah, I want to stay in business, that's all. She was pretty luscious, I must admit. Still, we write, you know. Mm-hmm. She more than me, but she's still there. Yeah, only 28, you know. Best shot I've ever met. Female, speaking, that is.
Save the reminiscences for your next book. What about my client?
Oh, I was afraid you'd get around to that. Okay, have him meet me and we'll chew over what it is he's after and arrange things accordingly. Katabi, the Buonam Kuba here has finished his beer. Let's hear another one. Kritanu Pesi.
My father got one of the biggest yellowback bakers to come out of this country at the Endabara Salt Lick in the forest, way back in the 20s. Well, I'd like to go there. But I'd also like to take a look round the Carissa area as well. And
a meeting had been arranged between Fitzgerald, the American, and David Ormrod. Max had fixed everything up. When Ormrod had arrived at the El Kabar restaurant in Government Road, he'd found his client-to-be already sitting outside at a pavement table.
Know it all for myself. Pictures are so second-hand, if you get what I mean. If we can get up to the Baringu volcanoes in Uganda, why, I'd be delighted, but Keen is the thing, you see, Mr. Ormerod.
Name's Dave.
Thanks. Mine's Cecil, but I hate it. I'd be honored if you'd call me Fitz.
Mm-hmm.
Well, mainly, I'm interested in bongo, hunter's antelope, the giant forest hog, and I want to get near buffalo as well. Anything else will be a bonus.
Fitzgerald wasn't a big man. He gave the lie to the tale that all Americans play baseball for their colleges, wear crew cuts, and talk like Gary Cooper. This man was more like a sane Jerry Lewis. He had an air of learning, almost, which disturbed Ormrod. There was something slightly nervous about him, too. He wore heavily tinted sunglasses. It was then, as Fitzgerald got up to go, that he knocked over the glass.
Oh, I'm sorry, I...
Fitzgerald didn't attempt to pick it up. His hands crept out towards the edge of the table, and he gripped the table. He was suddenly very still, staring, it seemed, past Ormrod up the road, past the Indian shops and the meat market. He said nothing. He smiled nervously. The hunter couldn't see the man's eyes behind the glasses.
Nobody about the glass. I mean, they... Fitz.
Something about the inclination of Fitzgerald's head, the way his hands came back together and formed a tight ball until the knuckles turned white, Ormrod saw the man for the first time. Something... And then he realized. Cecil Fitzgerald was blind.
I'm sorry. I should have told you, I know, but, well, you see, I don't want to shoot anything. I just go on safari. Just, well, I mean, you know, the way my father described it to me. The smell, feel of the bush. That's what really matters, isn't it? Not, I mean, well, I'd sure shoot if it was possible, but anyway, that's what I want. And I can assure you that
Fitz, but the safari you've decided on, I mean, the rainforest, a blind man up there, forgive me.
Dave, look. I can do anything you want me to. I promise you that. Anything you want me to do. It's just that I've got to know it all. Just like my old man said.
Five days later, Cecil Fitzgerald and his white hunter left the capital, bound first of all for the Garissa district, north of the Tana River. The excitement which always infected Ormrod infected him now, as the wagon headed north and the bustle of Nairobi was left far behind them. Fitzgerald, decked out in safari khaki and green, was the most excited client the hunter had ever taken out. Ormrod's own personal brand of excitement was increased a hundredfold when he observed the pleasure of his guest. During the days and night fires of the first week out from the city, the hunter grew to like the American enormously. By day, David Ormrod was an enthusiastic instructor.
Hunter's antelope. They favor this sort of dry scrub country. They're pretty widespread, right up to the Somali border near Kogyo. In the group where I'm looking at, there's only one male.
What do they look like?
Oh, about 4 feet at the shoulders. Got long, narrow faces. Beautiful things. The old male's horns are about 29 inches. Nice head, if you felt like thumping him. He looks far better running around. Whitish sort of line down the face between the eyes. We're lucky to see them, you know. When the sun gets up a bit, they'll buzz off and lie up in the thick stuff. Then you see their horns after that.
To the Kinnunkop, up to Kamkombeni. The hunter and his sightless client. Always the dark glasses. Always the head cocked slightly to one side as if listening intently. So intently. So far, the safari had been easy. Fitzgerald seemed to require only an occasional hand to guide him. Once or twice he had stumbled, and Ormrod had restrained him from walking into a dying campfire one night in the Ogoni sector around Garissa. But on the whole, it was a cinch. This Fitzgerald was ecstatic about every new smell, every fresh sound, the feel of every foreign object.
Hyena. Will he laugh in a minute?
Only if he finds something funny to laugh at. You know the story behind the laughing hyena?
Nope. You tell me.
Oh, there are many. One says that the great Lord God designed each and every animal according to his own pleasure and offered no excuse for doing so. He made the giraffe with a long neck. And then the hyena, with his sloping back and ugly face and silly ears and filthy habits. A wandering hyena saw another hyena. Actually, the hyena had already poked fun at the giraffe, you see, reckoning that anything with a neck like that must be good for a million laughs a minute. Anyway, after that, which angered God a lot, this hyena sees another hyena, takes one look at his face and back and all that, and laughs himself silly. And at that moment, God showed the laughing hyena a pool of water, in which the thing could see that he, too, looked like that. As he saw himself, his voice changed, and the silly cackle you hear from them came out. There you are, right on cue, laughing at themselves.
Jackals. Noisy, and yet it's like silence when one's used to New York.
Turn in, I reckon, Fitz. Tomorrow, the rainforest.
The rainforest. The forest of Mau, where the shy Bonga lives, the Ndongolo of Kikuyu legend, and the giant forest hog, Numira. Also herds of buffalo, the Mbogo. Dark forest, salt licks, high in altitude. The nights are icy, the days hot and cold in turn. The rainforest, perhaps the most truly African land on the continent, conjuring up pictures of Tarzan and Jane and Boy and Cheetah the ape. On the fourth day, Ormrod was fortunate enough to locate a fairly large herd of female bongo, close by a giant grove of bamboo.
Greatest prize. If only you could see them, Fitz. Like the hunter's antelope, they're about 4 feet at the shoulder. These are all females. We were lucky to have rain yesterday. They were in pretty dense forest then, but today they've moved out into these more open parts. Later on, they'll go back till tonight, then they'll come out again for feeding.
I reckon I could spend the rest of my life up here. Is this the only place they're found, the bongo?
No. Southwest Sudan, Congo, and West Africa. French Equatorial Africa, too. They're fairly widespread. But they're rare because they hide. Hide all the time. And the wind's with us now. Oh, we can get a bit closer if you like. Here, take my arm.
Right.
Come on.
They're making no sound. Why?
I've never, all my life, heard a bongo make any noise at all. Sorry, Fitz.
I can feel them. I know they're there, all right.
Do you? Oh, there are a couple of juveniles there. All of them youngsters and women, like Red. The males are dark brown. That's the old ones. The younger males are reddish brown.
Imagine human beings separated like this. Females keeping to themselves and the men going away and just joining forces when it's mating time.
It's a bloody good idea if you ask me. Okay, let's push on.
Ormrond was looking for buffalo spoor, but apart from some very old trails, nothing was found. They spent a week in the Mau Forest, and during that time, it rained steadily for 3 days. Fitzgerald was completely unperturbed. The two men stayed for much of the time in their small tent, discussing philosophy, politics, art and literature, everything under the sun. Their views differed occasionally, and the subject in question was debated hotly. When the heat and sun came back to the Mau Forest, they found a good fresh spoor. Buffalo. Nearby was a salt lick, much favoured by the animals of the forest. Ormrod decided that they'd wait there that evening.
You reckon the buff will come down?
They'll be along.
What?
Leopard. He's down there now, drinking. The minute he wasn't there, the next.
The spotted one drank, and then his thirst slaked, crept away into the fading light. Nothing appeared at all for 5 or 6 minutes.
Getting dark.
Yes.
Isn't it getting dark?
Mm-hmm. A little light will hold for 30 minutes yet. Then you're as good as any man. Better than most. You're on a par with the animals.
Yeah.
And then the buffalo came. Suspiciously at first, and then easily. A round dozen of the forest kings. Great spiraling horns, searching, it seemed, for the moon in the sky, and then deciding not to continue skywards, but to return and meet with their fellows instead. One old bull's horns doubled back, twisted and met. An old bull, this. The most bad-tempered of the 12. The 12 being examples of the most treacherous animal on the continent. The most dangerous of the royal big 5. They approached the salt lick, and after a last survey, they were down upon their front knees and drinking.
The wind's okay. Move a bit closer, I reckon. You'll hear them good then.
But these were peculiarly silent buffalo, drinking in the dying light. Ormrod and Fitzgerald got very close. The men were perhaps 30 yards from the buffalo when the leader threw up his head and bellowed.
There.
They're scared.
I'm not scared, but I think... Yes. They're going to go. They can feel one. I don't know why. The wind's... Oh, well. Now they're going, the other stuff will come.
The dark seemed to be a long time coming. It was becoming cold. But the men could still see a good long way. It's like that in the forest. And then, all of a sudden, it's pitch black. But Ormrod could see the bulls, and they quitted the lick. And he relaxed his grip on the rifle he carried. The bulls passed off obliquely and disappeared, but nothing else put in an appearance at all. 5 minutes later, Ormrod was forced to glance over his shoulder. He wasn't sure why, but something said, "Take a look that way. You might find it interesting." And so he did. It was interesting, all right. Too interesting.
Fitz, be a good bloke and don't ask any questions, but just... feel your way down there to the lake, will you?
Mm-hmm.
Go on.
pop it. Slowly now.
Why, what's the matter?
That big, ugly so-and-so with the twisted horns has come back. He's standing right behind us.
He was, too. The tiny, insect-rimmed eyes staring at the backs of the two watchers. Not a muscle upon the massive body moved. Then there was a faint movement from the animal. Perhaps a tail slowly flicked sideways. And then a front hoof stamped into the soft forest floor. And then, without more ado, the great head came down and the animal charged. The weapon, held by Ormrod, came up fast, and as the finger tightened upon the trigger, the hunter trod hard back and sideways. The foot found nothing beneath it but soft fern, and Ormrod fell, the gun discharged. And the gun spun from his grasp as the bull swept past where Ormrod had stood seconds earlier. The hunter disappeared from sight. The buffalo turned fast as lightning and traveled back towards where the form of David Ormrod threshed helplessly in a hollow bed of tangled fern. At the same moment, Cecil Fitzgerald sprinted towards his guide and flung himself down beside him, retrieving the rifle and falling backwards as the bull's left horn crashed through Ormrod's thigh.
Ah! Oh!
Fitzgerald staggered back onto his feet, gripping the rifle. The gun was reloaded with a movement swifter than the eye could follow. The bull threw its great head skywards and whirled towards its new adversary.
How do you feel?
Great, thanks. Well,
we're how many miles from the truck? If you don't mind, we'll take it in stages. You're darn heavy.
Okay. Now, look here, Fitzgerald. How the blazes do you suddenly get cured of blindness in the middle of the Mau Forest?
I never was blind.
Oh, not a miracle, then. Just a good actor. It's true. Okay. Fire away, Fitz. Let me eat before we try the next stage to the truck.
Well, it was in the war, France. The Russians had pushed the Germans out and made it hot foot to Europe. We landed with Eisenhower in Normandy. We liberated Paris, not like the Hollywood pictures say, all on our own, but we helped. It was just after the Hitler assassination plot had failed. It was pretty tough in Paris. Still a lot of resistance from the Germans. I was a sniper. It was my job. I was pretty successful. Then one day, I got a German in my sights. The back of his head, clean in my sights. He came backwards round the street corner. I didn't know what he'd been doing, and I don't know what he was planning to do. He didn't have a gun. He'd been running. My finger tightened on the trigger. I could see him clearly through the telescopic sighting, and then he turned. I got a full view of his face. He was no more than 17 or 18. I couldn't shoot. I tried to shoot, and then I made some sort of movement up there on my perch. He saw me, his mouth opened, and I shot him, clean. I shot him right through, and he fell. And I had a son, Dave. He was 19. He went into the war on his 19th birthday, 1943. He got sent to Italy and died on the peninsula. But I shot him in France. I got him in my sights and blew him. I swore I'd never, never touch another gun as long as I lived. Never shoot at anything that moved, had blood. Well, after the war, my wife had died of, well, doesn't matter what. Sheila and me, we never felt much for each other anyway. Graham was all to me, and so afterwards there was nothing much for me. I thought of, I didn't know what I was going to do, and then somebody said Africa. And one day I began to read your books. I got through all four in a weekend. And I thought, there's a guy I'm going to meet and be with for a while in the bush. But, darn it, you thumped home the whole big man and hunting mystique deal, Dave. The moment of truth jazz, the whole Hemingway business. I'll tell you a thing or two about that old man someday, but it doesn't matter now. Anyway, I thought he won't want to know a guy who can't stand the sight of a gun. But I had to go out with you. Your pal Max is a great guy, but, well, I wanted the best. And to me, you were the best. But I couldn't stand the thought of, well, you know, you thinking me. So I got blind. I saw everything, and this trip's been the greatest experience of my life. I'm sorry about your leg and that, but I saw it all the time. Well, I guess that's all there is to it.
Cecil Fitzgerald, thanks for belting that ugly cross-horned lump of offal back there. Now, if you're good enough to give me a hand, we'll stagger back to the truck and then get back to civilization, so-called, and have a Chinese dinner. Okay?
Okay. There we go.
Join us again next week for another story of the African Bushveld. It might be fact, it might be fiction, in General Motors on Safari. Brought to you by General Motors South African, manufacturers of Cadillac, Buick, Oldsmobile, Pontiac, Chevrolet, Beaumont, Vauxhall, Opel, Holden, Bedford, and GMC Motor Vehicles.